Today, COVID-19 scenarios. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one of his posts covering finance and problem news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Now, it's too soon to know for sure how the current virus event will play out. Reading the various informed and ill-informed views have been quite interesting over the last few days, with some playing it down to a mere scratch on the global economy, while others are playing it up as a potential catastrophe. And social media, it seems, has started to prune out some of the more dire and outlandish rumours, which is a good thing. We have had a significant number of requests from our viewers for an update, so it's time to do just that. And to assist, I've consulted my crystal ball, and so I'm going to tell you a little bit about what I think may happen. But of course, it's only a suggestion. It may not be right. And my crystal ball is quite cloudy. But it changes colour. So let's start with the latest from the Australian Bankers Association of all places. They've just said, Australian small businesses financially impacted by the spread of the coronavirus are being urged to contact their bank to access assistance on offer, which can include deferred loan payments, waiving fees and restructuring loans. Australian Banking Association CEO Anna Bly said any small business should not tough it out on their own if they are financially impacted by the effects of the coronavirus. Thousands of businesses have had a horror story start to the year with drought, bushfires and floods, and now the coronavirus having a severe impact on both their ability to create products and also export them to markets overseas. Banks have hardship teams in place to walk businesses through the assistance on offer if they've been impacted by events outside their control. Any business financially impacted by the effect of the coronavirus, such as tourism operators, growers, and exporters of fresh produce, and those reliant on international education, should contact their bank to assess the assistance on offer, she said. The type of assistance offered will depend on individual circumstances, but it can include a deferral of scheme loan repayments, waiving fees and charges, and interest-free periods or no interest rate increases or debt consolidation to help make repayments more manageable. Now, I think this is more than just PR. As we know, businesses in some sectors are already feeling the pain. We see that in our surveys. And I think tourism will be the first cab off the rank. We discussed the importance of the tourist dollar from China relating to the bushfires recently, and the coronavirus just makes things worse. Foreign visitors generated around $45.2 billion in income to the economy, and that was up 4.7% on the previous year. And this was generated from 8.7 million international visitors, up 2.5%, with an annual spend per trip of $5,219. Within the $45.7 billion, $17.1 billion came from holidays, $13.2 billion from education, $7.5 billion from visiting family and relatives, $4.1 billion on businesses, and $1.2 billion for other reasons. Visitors from China accounted for $13.2 billion of spend, of which $3.2 billion was holidays and $7.1 billion was on education. And this came from 1.3 million visitors with an average spend per trip of $9,235. The United States was second with $4 billion spent, of which $2 billion was on holidays and just $300 million on education. And this came from 771,000 visitors with an average spend of $5,200. Next was United Kingdom with $3.3 billion spent, with $1.4 billion on holidays and $1.3 billion on visiting family and friends, and just $68 million on education. And we had 669,000 visitors from the UK, and their average spend was $4,959. New Zealand accounted for $2.6 billion in spend, of which $1.1 billion was holidays, $0.7 billion was on families and friends, and just $76 million on education. And interestingly, they accounted for 1.3 million visits and their average spend was $2,032, which may tell us something about our Kiwi cousins. And across the states and territories, New South Wales received $11.5 billion, of which $3.6 billion was for holidays, $4.7 billion for education, and $1.4 billion for visiting relatives. The average spend per trip was $2,610. And of this, around $1 billion was from regional New South Wales, mainly holidays at $381 million and education at $362 million. Victoria accounted for $8.8 billion, of which $2.3 billion was holidays, $4 billion was education, and $1.5 billion was visiting relatives and friends. The average trip was worth $2,810, and regional Victoria earned about $594 million from international tourism, of which $249 million was holiday-related from international visitors. In Queensland, international tourism was worth $6 billion, which included $2.8 billion for holidays, $1.7 billion for education, and $830 million for visiting families and friends. And within that, Gold Coast generated $1.3 billion, including holidays, at $755 million, and education at $335 million. And Brisbane was at $2.8 billion, comprising holidays of $644 million, and education at $1.3 billion. And regional Queensland generated $1.8 billion, of which holidays was $1.4 billion. So overall, China accounted for 26.9% of tourist income, contributing 18.7% of holiday spend, and a massive 53.8% of education-related travel spend. Which takes us to the university sector. Now, Moody's did some recent analysis on this. The emergence of the coronavirus in the Asia-Pacific region has the potential to significantly reduce international student numbers and thus tuition revenue, particularly as countries impose restrictions on international travel to contain the spread of the virus, they said. Australian universities will face the greatest imminent credit risk given their relatively high concentration of Chinese students, their proximity to the main region affected by coronavirus, and the fact that the outbreak coincides with the start of their academic year. The impact will be less immediate for universities in the USA, Canada, the UK, and Singapore, but will ultimately depend on the severity and length of the outbreak. The impact will be greatest on Australian universities because of the high proportion of international students and the timing of the academic year. A relatively high proportion of international students, especially from China, leaves Australian universities more exposed than universities in other countries to the impact of the coronavirus on student numbers and the resulting potential for lower revenue. The Australian Group of Eight universities have the highest concentration of international students in Australia, with the Chinese cohort representing around 60% of their international student enrolments. Heightened travel restrictions will impact universities more broadly than just international enrolments, also affecting exchange programs, field schools, placements or other programs. And the timing of the Australian academic year also highlights the exposure for the country's universities. It began in February-March 2020 and follows Lunar New Year celebrations, during which travel between Australia and China is high. Some of the international intake for 2020 is already in the country, but others still need to travel to Australia. Delays in travel will impact university revenue and require countermeasures, which currently include deferring the start of the semester, delayed on-campus classes, and increased online access where possible. In contrast, most students from China studying in Canada, the UK, Singapore, and the US have already returned for exams and the start of the second semesters before the outbreak and the quarantine travel advisory started. If coronavirus is quickly contained, meaning within several months, the effect on Australian universities is likely to be manageable, with revenue deferred but not lost, and no change to credit quality. The anticipated coronavirus-related disruption of the international cohort will be manageable for semester 1 2020, with those best placed benefiting from having built significant reserves of cash and liquid investments, excluding endowments, in recent years. However, if the current outbreak is not contained quickly, the revenue effect and the drawdown of cash reserves has the potential to be significant. Highly attractive to international students, Australian universities are vulnerable to negative shocks affecting individual student markets. If regional travel is affected to the degree that it was during the severe acute respiratory syndrome, the SARS outbreak in 2003, travel between Asia, particularly China, and Australia would likely be significantly affected in the next 2 to 3 quarters. The SARS outbreak was contained within 6 months. Although the GO8 exhibit the highest exposure to international students, the size and diversification of their revenue bases and their strong global brands partly mitigates their exposure to negative shocks. An escalation of the coronavirus outbreak is likely to be manageable for these universities in 2020, given their liquidity positions and the likelihood that international student volumes will recover once the spread has been contained. Several universities are undertaking capital expansion programs, but these are made up of discrete elements and therefore can be scaled back if necessary. Countermeasures available to the universities are most likely to flow through 1. Expense controls such as flexible workforce arrangements reflecting higher levels of casual and sessional staffing levels. 2. Additional cash reserves accrued in recent years due to strong performance, particularly by the GO8. And 3. The deferral of discretionary capital expenditure. And finally, 4. Access to cash and investments, excluding endowments, as well as short-term debt markets. And thus, they concluded that Australian universities face more immediate credit risks from the coronavirus outbreak. And we think the combined damage across education and tourism is going to be north of $2 billion per month, with an acceleration of risks as the duration of the crisis continues. The economic slowdown in China is also reducing demand for our exports, including iron ore, LNG and coal. Iron ore is a bellwether, and the price dropped to around $78 on the 3rd of February to a current price of around $85. My IFO made the point that a $10 fall in the price translates to around a $3.3 billion hit to Australia's account. LNG prices are also lower, around $1.85, which again could translate to lower revenue on our exports. And thermal coal prices are also lower, with prices below $70 now appearing. So our largest exports appear to be exposed to lower prices as demand eases. And the latest trade balance showed a positive $5.2 billion to December, but exports are contingent on precisely those commodities which are weakening. So again, the question is how much and for how long? Well, initial modelling suggests that a fall of $4 to $5 billion net income is likely based on known variables per month. But again, more if this continues. And then, will there be a second-order impact from consumers and business sentiment? Well, data out today from the Westpac Melbourne Institute shows that sentiment remains weak overall. At 95.5, the index remains well below the long-run average of 101.4 and firmly in pessimistic territory. Readings below 100 indicate that pessimists outnumber optimists. This downbeat mood has prevailed since the middle of 2019 and coincided with a marked slowdown in consumer demand that looks to have been carried into early 2020. The lift in sentiment this month likely reflects easing concerns around bushfires and comes despite some significant negative developments, most notably the coronavirus outbreak abroad. Against this, the escalating coronavirus outbreak looks to have only a limited effect on consumer sentiment at the moment. While surprising, this is similar, they say, to the experience during the SARS outbreak in 2003, which had little or no impact on sentiment in Australia, although it did have a material impact on confidence elsewhere, in China in particular. And business confidence has evaporated, and business conditions have stabilised at weak levels, suggesting that the economy is trending sideways, stuck in the slow lane. These were the key messages from the private business surveys late in 2019, and they remain the key messages as the 2020 year begins, as evidenced by the NABS survey for January, which was conducted from January the 21st to February the 3rd. Falling forward orders suggest weak business conditions are likely to persist near term. In January, the business conditions index was unchanged at +3, which is below the long-run average of +6 dating back to 1997. The January outcome matches the average since last April, to be well down from +18 in mid-2018. The economy decelerated sharply in the second half of 2018 into 2019, and business confidence rose by 1 point to be at -1 in January, well below the long-term average reading. The lack of confidence is understandable given the subdued economic backdrop, as well as recent events, notably the bushfires and the outbreak of the coronavirus in China, which is Australia's number one trading partner. That points to the risk of weak equipment spending in coming quarters. I think that we should expect to see more profit warnings, like we got from, for example, Cochlear, the hearing aid specialist, warning that their guidance for financial year 20 will drop from $290 to $300 million to $270 to $290 million due to the expected impact of the 2019 nCoV virus in Greater China. And so we should also watch the airlines, the other travel and education sectors, as well as supporting service industries. Now, I think banks are at the end of the chain, as it were. So in the short term, not much to see there, but that could change later as businesses begin to topple. And as I may have said previously, we should be watching the European banks, who are particularly exposed to some of the vagaries out of China. But then the question becomes, will the virus threat dissipate anytime soon? Well, probably not. As CNN reported yesterday, China said it had confirmed 59,804 cases on the mainland, an increase of 15,152 cases from the previous day, and the death toll from the coronavirus outbreak in the country now stands at 1,367, according to China's National Health Commission. Only two deaths have occurred outside of mainland China. The World Health Organization officials described China's decision to broaden their definition of what constitutes a confirmed case as a necessary measure. However, the major increase in the number of deaths and the cases of the coronavirus appears to dash hopes that the outbreak was leveling off. It comes as additional cases were confirmed on the quarantine cruise ship docked in the Japanese city of Yokohama. And in the US, where the Center for Disease Control and Prevention warned the country can and should be prepared for this new virus to gain a foothold. In the UK too, a new case was confirmed on Wednesday in London, with health officials warning that more were likely to follow. World Health Organization officials had previously expressed some optimism at the apparent stabilizing outbreak in China, but even then they cautioned that the virus could still spread elsewhere. This outbreak could still go in any direction, World Health Organization Director Terros said on Wednesday. We have to invest in preparedness, Tedros said, adding that richer countries should help invest in countries with a weaker health system. He warned that the virus could create havoc if it reaches a country whose health system is not capable of handling such an epidemic. Speaking at a US Senate hearing on Wednesday, Scott Gottlieb, former commissioner of the US Food and Drug Administration, said that testing has not been done aggressively enough and should be expanded to cover more symptoms. I think that we should be leaning in very aggressively to broaden diagnostic screening right now, particularly in communities where there is a lot of immigration, where these outbreaks could emerge, to identify them early enough that they'll be small enough that we can intervene to prevent more epidemic spread in this country, he said. Gottlieb pointed to Singapore, which has now identified around 50 cases, to make a point about the US, which receives similar numbers of travellers from China every year. On a statistical basis, there's no reason to believe that if Singapore got implants of this virus, we didn't. You would expect them to have been identified earlier in Singapore as a densely populated island, he said. But it does suggest, at least to me, that we probably have some community spread right now that we just haven't identified yet. And as the number of coronavirus cases jumped dramatically in China, a top infectious disease scientist warns that things could get far worse. Two-thirds of the world's population could catch it, as reported by Bloomberg. So says Ira Longini, an advisor to the World Health Organization who tracked studies of the virus's transmissibility in China. His estimates implies that there could be eventually billions more affected than the current official tally of around 60,000. If the virus spreads to anywhere near that extent, it will show the limitations of China's strict containment measures, including quarantining areas inhabited by tens of millions of people. World Health Organization Director Tedros has credited these steps as giving the rest of China and the world a window in which to prepare. Quarantines may slow the spread, but the virus had the opportunity to roam in China and beyond before they went into effect, Longini said. Longini's modelling is based on data showing that each infected person normally transmits the disease to two or three other people. A lack of rapid tests and the relative mildness of the infection in some people also makes it difficult to track its spread, he said. Even if there were a way to reduce transmission by half, that would still imply that roughly one-third of the world would become infected. Unless the transmission ability changes, surveillance and containment can only work so well. Longini, who's the co-director of the Center of Statistics and Quantitative Infectious Diseases at the University of Florida, said at the World Health Organization headquarters in Geneva, isolating cases and quarantining contacts is not going to stop this virus. And he's not alone in warning of the possibility of a far greater spread. Neil Ferguson, a researcher at Imperial College London, estimated that as many as 50,000 people may be infected each day in China. And Gabriel Leung, a public health professor at the University of Hong Kong, has also said close to two-thirds of the world could catch the virus if it is left unchecked. The estimates of spread are part of a spectrum of possibilities that could unfold as the epidemic progresses, said a biostatistician at Northeastern University of Boston. The next few weeks may provide more information about how easily the disease spreads outside China, particularly if more measures are put in place to control it, he said. People change behaviours in response to disease, he said. This is kind of a worst-case scenario. It's one of the possibilities. And more data needs to be gathered to gain a better idea of how far the virus is likely to range, said David Heyman, an infectious disease expert at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, who oversaw the World Health Organization's response to SARS in 2003. We're seeing countries outside of China that have been able to contain the outbreak pretty well. I'm not saying they're wrong, he said, of estimates from the likes of Longini and Leung. I'm saying the models will need to be refined as more information comes to light. So I think we need to consider the risks of a longer, more severe event than SARS. And to underline this, Alibaba Group CEO Daniel Yang warned on Thursday that the COVID-19 outbreak in China is developing into a black swan event that could have severe consequences for China and the global economy, as reported in Zero Hedge. Zhang told analysts during a conference call that the company's fiscal third quarter results beat expectations, but warned of near-term impacts relating to the deadly virus outbreak. He said Alibaba's revenue jumped 38% year-on-year for the quarter and promoted robust growth due to a record Singles Day. Alibaba's group CFO, Maggie Wu, said it's too early to quantify the impact COVID-19 will have on its businesses and other operating segments across Asia. Wu said that the virus shuttered major manufacturing hubs across the country and led to hundreds of millions of people in quarantine. She said demand for goods and services has declined and the delay of the workforce getting back to work could further hinder economic growth. Wu suggested that Alibaba is not immune to this imbalance of supply and demand, otherwise known as a shock, but says the company sees an opportunity in the virus crisis, which is a great way to spin it. She emphasized the outbreak is a one-off occurrence, and by helping customers through difficult times, that enables the company to drive long-term growth. But she provided no timetable of when the company thinks the confirmed cases and deaths will peak. However, there's only so much the company can spin by pushing investors away from looking at short-term impacts by giving them optimistic views about the distant future. Wu said overall revenue growth for the first quarter would be negative, as the economic shock from the virus has already shut down two-thirds of the Chinese economy. The shock Alibaba is warning about was also outlined last month by former Morgan Stanley Asia chairman Stephen Roach, in which he said the global economy could already be in a period of vulnerability where an exogenous shock, such as COVID-19, could be the trigger for the next worldwide recession. With the world economy operating dangerously close to stall speed, The confluence of ever-present shocks and a sharply diminished trade cushion raises serious questions about financial markets' increasingly optimistic view of global economic prospects, Roach said. The Black Swan warning was also repeated by Freeport McMoRan CEO Richard Atkinson several weeks ago after he said the outbreak of the virus in China is a real black swan event for the global economy. And why are corporations and former top investment managers warning about black swan events in China and across the world? Well, it's because as China's economy screeches to a halt, so will the world. This comes at a time when central banks' ammo to thwart below-trend growth has been exhausted. So too soon to call the effect, but we can sure see the potential instruments of weaker growth, nay recession, on the horizon. So, I think it's time to polish my ball a little more and see whether I can detect any more trends in the data. But at the moment, it seems to me that it's too soon to know precisely what the impact will be, and we should certainly not just dismiss it as a mere blip. This could get serious, and actually, I don't think I need a crystal ball to draw that conclusion. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time. We'll